Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Well, they're at it again. The folks at Chicago Folks Operetta have another new show, and I am privileged to have the artistic director, who's also the male lead in the show, Gerald Franzen. Say hello, Gerald.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having us here today.
Tell us how you arrived at this show, because no one knows the show. It's a Chicago premiere and an American premiere.
Right. Our company, as through the years of evolving, we were interested in exploring the Berlin School of Operetta. And this was a operetta school that was distinct in Berlin in the sense that it was a mixture of the Berlin humor, the Berlin revue style shows that were going on in cabarets around there, that had its unique and own type of style and sound. And one of the things that the Berlin School of Operetta had was a jazz element that they inherited from the American soldiers that were coming over there. And there were a bunch of different composers that were quite prolific at the time. And one was, of course, Paul Abraham here. And we discovered some of his shows a few years ago, which I thought were just incredible. One was Victoria and Her Hussar, Die Blume from Hawaii, or The Flower of Hawaii, and finally The Ball at the Savoy, which we just started performing here. So it's a great, great stuff, and it was a very interesting and unique sound and unique take on operetta.
Besides you being artistic director and starring in the show, you were one of the translators.
Yes, yeah.
So tell us about that, because that is one of the unique things you do. One of the biggest problems I understood from making the lesser-known operettas popular in America is they're in German. No one can understand them. And to do the super titles like the major operas is an expensive proposition.
Well, right. I do the translations with my next door neighbor of all things, Hirsch Glagoff. We both speak German, and Hirsch is a real whiz with language, and is very good at with a come up with a very witty sense of humor and stuff here. And what we've done is that we've revived these old shows, taken these shows that did make it across the pond for a couple of variety of reasons. One was outbreaks of a couple world wars.
Yeah, that tends to make the Germans not too popular.
Right, yes. Yeah, so that's they're up against that. But also finding a good translation. Some of the shows in their early 20s and stuff were picked up by Schubert Brothers or various U.S. production houses here. And they were translated, but very anachronistic translations that were more distinct to the 20s than what had been popular at the time. Very distant, very removed from what the actual scripts were saying, even in the original German. So the difficulty, of course, is finding the shows and creating a good translation that works. And so what we've been doing is, for the last 9 years now, have been taking either Viennese operas or Berlin-based operettas and translating from German to English and making them in less anachronistic versions of these shows and truer, keeping the true sense of what's going on with the show in the original form.
Also, with that, German to English tends to work, right?
It does.
Similar?
Well, these translations take a long time. I mean, dialogue's one thing, creating a dialogue that you can translate. Putting English music onto into a German song that's originally written for German is quite another thing. Fortunately, you know, I'm a singer and my wife's a singer, and so we are able to work and play on a lot of words and make sure that they're comfortable for singers to sing. So I think our stuff is very singer-friendly and sounds very natural, but it takes a long time. I might take 2 days on, you know, an 8-bar phrase to get it exactly what
Wow.
we want done.
Well, you've done a great job, because in this show, the lyrics sat on the music beautifully. The rhymes worked beautifully. It was as if it was written in English.
Yeah, that was a great thing about the show. Especially, you know, Abraham is very connected to the influence of American jazz and the new syncopations at the time, the 30s, when this is revolution time, that he was writing. And he picked up the American vernacular, so it makes a lot of sense that this syncopated music, which is still distinct to American music, would work well for an English translation.
So he picked up American idioms and put them in German. So would you, so your job was to bring it back. That helped, I would think.
Help bring it back and make it fit naturally. And it seems to work really well with this show in particular.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the show. Mm-hmm. It starts out with you and your wife, Allison, doing an operetta. Tell us about that. And then it just changes.
Well, it's a very interesting variation. In true operetta form, we start off with some very schmaltzy duets, and it seems like it's going to take on this, including some traditional 3-4 time waltzes. It's going to take on this very grand operetta style show. And then it soon boils down into this ridiculous farce that...
But you guys gradually do it. You gradually so overplay it that it becomes obvious to the audience that you're kind of winking at them that there's going to be more, folks.
Well right. That's absolutely right. We're winking at that there's more around the corner. I think it beautifully sets it up that the couple is so in love and into each other that what could possibly go wrong to this seemingly perfect relationship? Well, what can go wrong is the man's past experiences with his past women in his life. So,
yeah, and there's some terrific characters in there too.
Right. Yeah, we have a couple of great characters. The character Aristide, who's the lead that I'm playing, has a very good friend named Mustafa Bey, who's a Turkish diplomat that has six wives, past wives and stuff here, and is always on the hunt and prowl for more, and it's a great comic foil.
Yes. It's a really great character. Yeah, very memorable.
Yeah. He's very, very funny. And his music, of course, a lot of dance, really great dance music and great numbers and opportunity to really, it really requires an actor that can dance and sing and have great comic timing. And this is a real precursor to what was going to happen on Broadway. And this show was written, of course, in 1932. So Avraham really understood this album. Actually, you could say in many ways at the forefront in developing this archetype.
Well, yeah, the Schubert brothers actually bought the rights to it, and Oscar Hammerstein did a translation, and then nothing happened.
It never happened. And this was due to the fact that, you know, with the success of Showboat and their Jerome Kern's work and stuff, they were looking at American shows now. And for the Schubert brothers, for years, the vogue was to bring Viennese operettas
or Gilbert and Sullivan
operas give them lavish production. Proust, it was a sure money winner. And this started out with The Merry Widow. The Merry Widow proved to be such a big financial success for him. So it was natural that J.J. Schubert would go over to Europe and find the latest great operetta over there and bring it back to the States. They'd have Romberg work on it, Sigmund Romberg, or mm-hmm. the various other composers that they had in their production company, and they'd work on these shows and create translations and stuff that would work.
But this show was the last major hit of the Weimar Republic.
Right, exactly. The last major hit of the Weimar Republic. It was in 32, 33, it was the biggest show out there. And of course, the Daily Theater in London picked the show up and brought over. And then Hammerstein, of course, did the translation of it. But it never made it across the pond. And the reason was that the Schubert brothers started looking for other American composers. And the show, like the composer, we've been largely forgotten. And that was one of the things we've done with this work, is that we're not only restoring and bringing another premiering a piece here, but also we're also reviving, giving voice to a man who was silenced during the Nazi era and had remained silent through all these years.
Yeah, I didn't know. I'm pretty up on this stuff, and I had never heard of him.
Yeah, he's Paul Avraham.
I have now.
Very interesting character. In 1930, he came out with his first hit show as Victorian Hussar, which showed these elements of the American jazz, followed up by The Flower of Hawaii. In 31 and 32, he had, of course, Ball and Savoy. Three overnight success hits for him made him a very wealthy man right away. In those years here, he bought a small Rococo villa in Berlin, and was known to go on famous shopping sprees of, you know, buying 300 made-to-measure shirts at one time and 60 suits at one sitting.
Wow.
And would hold a goulash party once or twice a week, and everyone of Berlin society would attend these things here. And he was quite the active social.
Berlin was quite the decadent city in that time, wasn't it?
Right. It was a great place for a guy like him to explore. You know, jazz was heavily incorporated into Berlin by this time here.
A lot of American jazz artists that came over and played, right?
A lot of
American. Armstrong, and so they all played Berlin.
All the bands played through it, and there was a big vogue for it. But, unfortunately, it was considered degenerate music by the Nazis and stuff, and so Abraham suffered the fate of a lot of his cast. A lot of the cast in the original Ball and Savoy, Rosie Barsoni, Gita Alpar, Oscar Dennis, these were all Jewish performers, and they were all of them were forced into exile of some sort, including Abraham. So we're revoicing these guys. We're telling their story, much like James Conlin's been doing with this project over at Ravinia with bringing out these Jewish composers that are now largely forgotten and doing that. But what we are doing, these composers we're dealing with, these are the popular people at the time. They were more popular than any classical composer at the time, and they were the hits. They were the Andrew Lloyd Webbers of the day, so to speak, or the operetta stars were the movie stars of the day. And people clamored to see these people in, the original Ball and Savoy production in 1932. Gita Alpar had to do the Tijuana Mora aria multiple times around the arena after the show. I mean,
these shows lasted 3, 4, 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people could sit through it and they loved it. And they were, Abraham specialized in these big review numbers. So it was very heavily dance influenced. Shows and
your production certainly reflects all that too.
Yeah, we have a great
man.
Production.
It really dances. Wow.
It's very well choreographed. Todd Rhodes did a fantastic job with getting some great dancers in for us and getting an ensemble that can dance together as well. And it's fun. Well,
your two leads can really dance.
Right. Trent Oldham and Cynthia Gruhl are our comic couple, but our comic dancing couple, and they carry a lot of the heavy lifting of the show, and they are terrific dancers, terrific energy on stage. It's almost frenetic energy on stage, and they bring a witty and fun, create a witty and fun atmosphere.
It's as if we're back in the 30s.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And the set's designed, it's all
the Art Deco
like
set. Folks, the set will just blow you away. It says, how do you do it? And you have 20 musicians. You have 22 in the cast. Mm-hmm. By the way, the ensemble work is terrific. There's a lot of stable Chicago people in this that I've seen in many shows.
Yeah, we have a lot of people from Chicago show, and it's a solid, very good singers. We had a lot of people audition for the show. It's a great cast. We had Adam Vanessa did our set design. It was incredible set design, and Julian Pike was our lighting designer, and of course. Kristen Barrett did a fantastic job with keeping the action, our director, keeping the action flowing. And
yeah, it really keeps moving.
And the show has a great arc to it, and it's a very, very fun time to use to understand. Yeah.
How do you do it for $40 a ticket? I mean, the downtown shows are now nearing or over 100.
What about
lyrics, 200 or 250?
Well, we're performers and entertainers first, and we want to make this work accessible. And it's a struggle. I don't think there's any company in Chicago that's putting 40 or 23 singers on dancers on stage in a 20-piece orchestra for the budget that we're doing that. There's no one doing that. But we do it. We do it because we believe in the work. And we believe in spirit. And we want many people to see the shows as possible and share it. So we're managing the budgets very tightly on this here, and making sure that we're bringing quality performers in. We're building a company based on great performance and interesting projects. And for the performers, that plays a lot into it. Not only do we create an opportunity for them to perform, but also to be part of something unique and special.
Well, as I said in my review, I challenge people from Broadway in Chicago, from the Goodman, from the Lyric, to come and see this show. These shows need to be, can you imagine to have a tenth of some of the resources they have on some of their shows?
I'd look at a show like this, and I thought this, opening night, that it'd be great to have a show like this at Lyric. The Kolmischoper did the show in Berlin, did it last year, and they're actually going to remount it again. It was a huge, huge hit there.
I think it would be
super
yeah. Even
super
if it was an added show. You know, they're doing the Broadway musical, yeah. which I think is great. But that's yeah. over now.
Yeah.
See, they have another month in the summer where they could put this on.
Yeah.
And once a show like this was put on, especially if you guys were involved, because you know how to do this show.
Yeah. Yeah,
you'd be doing one every year there.
I think it'd be terrific. Of course, we would love something like that. But I think these shows are accessible. I certainly think keeping the shows in our vernacular, keeping the shows in English and doing them in English is the right way to do it here in the States.
You're carving out a niche.
Yeah.
I mean, some of your past shows I've seen, The Land of Smiles and the Circus Princess, and some of those were fantastic.
Yeah.
The first time I saw you guys, wow, I couldn't believe it. And then I looked at the ticket price, and I think it was like $35 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing you do that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a hard budget to keep together, but it's the love of the project, love what we're doing, and we're finding, you know, a lot of great, great performers who are willing to work with us.
Are you getting any grants from any of the organizations?
We have some grants. We have some grants, and we're always seeking out donations. There's donors or people that
where
really
would they,
believe in
this. If somebody wanted to donate, believed in this, where would they go to donate?
They go to our website, chicagofolksopera.org, and there's a donate button on that page there. And
folks, you got to do that. This stuff. Just come out and see this show. Let's have a little commercial for it. Today's the 19th.
Bald Savoy will run for the next, we have nine more performances, starting, of course, tonight. We have one 19th, but we run through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and we do Sunday matinee. So it ends August 3rd is the last day of the show. But we have a Sunday matinee this weekend and next two weekends as well. And Friday, Saturday.
There's tickets available.
Tickets are available. It's a great time. It's so much fun. It's a high energy show. I think you won't be bored with it. It's an incredible amount of fun, and it's a unique chance to see a little bit of history.
Yeah. Well, it's a transitional show. Mm-hmm. It is an operetta,
mm-hmm.
partly,
right?
But it kind of segues quickly into an old fashioned Broadway musical with toe tapping songs and a lot of humor and bigger than life characters, 20-piece
yeah.
orchestra.
Yeah.
You realize about the only other place in town that has a full orchestra is Light Opera.
Right.
In Everson. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone else they're reduced down in a lot of synthetic music.
We're trying to give the whole effect. We're trying to, you know, to show, put these shows together and in a way that is how it would have been done when it was originally performed. So
costumes are terrific.
Yeah, we had a beautiful,
very
beautiful
period
costumes.
Oriented
yeah.
costumes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a great, great show. We have great cast. I think our Madeline, which is of course my wife Allison Kelly, but I think she's incredible.
She is. She's awesome.
And it's brings a real vulnerability to the character. And there's lots.
And you can tell you guys get along as husband and wife. There's that chemistry there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And, which isn't always true in a husband and wife playing together, as you know.
Well, it's a lot. Yeah, I like her. She's a lot of fun. So we've been doing this for many years. We met in an operetta. So this is part of our.
And you guys lived together in Germany, right?
We were in Phantom. Both of us were in Phantom of the Opera for 3 years over. And Allison was
in German.
And Christine over there in Phantom of the Opera. Yeah. So.
And where did you learn your German? Did you grow up with it, or?
Well, we learned it over there.
Oh, you learned.
I learned it there. I learned a little bit in college, but I learned it on my time there in Germany. I really worked on it, and of course we performed in German every night, so it became a natural.
So that's a question that a lot of people have asked me to ask opera people, and I have asked some.
Yeah.
Nathan Gunn gave me an answer. How important is it for you to speak the language, to sing in the language?
Well, it's very important. It certainly makes it a lot easier. It certainly gives you a different sensibility about it. Certainly. I think that's for every language, whether it's the Italian, French, or German. I think it's important that the singers immerse themselves in it and learn to live in that language and start thinking in that language. makes a lot more sense of some of these words. I mean, you know, even the German, you know, when we translate in German to English, there's variances in the German to English, and some stuff is not really translatable. You really
that's true in all languages, right? Idioms and
give
certain
effect.
Things.
So, but her having a good understanding of the language certainly helps us understand what would the equivalent be in English.
So when you were performing at the, you have a background of performing at the Lyric Opera. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you did shows in Italian. Mm-hmm. You speak?
Italian. We dabble in a little Italian, a little French. But German is my strongest language by far, you know. But they're very good about coaching you on diction and understanding. And you singers are trained to understand what they're singing. You need to be able to connect emotionally to the words, whether they're in English or Italian or whatever your language is. So,
well, I think that separates the classically trained from people just mm-hmm. singing words.
Right. Yeah. I do.
And you guys have that. And it comes across. The other thing that people don't realize is how modern operetta performers, how much they're actors too. They're
right.
Not just the guy leaning against the wall belting or the fat lady singing. They're actors and performers.
We are a performance oriented company. We are looking for those classical singers that want to perform, wanted more than just stand and sing in a chorus, which of course we love choral music and stuff like this, but who really want to perform and get up there on stage. And that's what our company does. That's the opportunities that we provide singers and also give them experience and great time on stage and learn how to be on stage. So
tell us a couple of the shows that you're proudest of.
Oh, I think there's...
I know this. You've done nine original translations.
Nine original translations. I would think... I can think of a bunch of them. Of course, mm-hmm. Arizona Lady comes to mind. We're looking at doing a recording of that this year.
Great.
Hopefully, you'll get that out on the Noxus label. It's a terrific show. It's a Western operetta. We kind of put our company on the map, and it's fun. Works beautifully in
English. I have not seen it. I hope you revive it.
We'll do it. We're going to try to do a concert version so we can make the recording of it. That's
great.
Exactly on our map. Rose of Istanbul was another great show mm-hmm. for us here, which we did in 2011. I can think of The Cousin from Nowhere.
Yeah.
Another great show.
Yes, that was very impressive.
And then I would also say that I think that also the... show that not many people saw that we want to get back to do was a show called The Girl in the Train by Leo Fall, and it is a riot. It's fun. It's great music, and Fall is one of those vastly underappreciated operatic composers that we particularly love, and we see a lot of potential.
So you're planning on doing that?
Planning to do it. That was the early years of the company when we had three instruments and a piano,
and
a cast of 20. We still had the big cast. That's when we were.
Are you primarily just going to be doing a summer show, or are you thinking about doing winter?
We would like to do some shows in the winter, probably some one acts. We're certainly doing a lot of very important concerts, concert work now. It's part of what we're doing as a company, and as we're.
So if they go sign up on your site for your newsletter, then they can get notified of these?
All the information. Yeah.
Okay, folks, you ought to do that because this is an important. What you're doing, you realize how important it is.
Yeah, we realize we're that bridge. We're the last, groups to be doing this stuff here. That we're only maybe one of two companies in the United States that are actually taking shows and
so
premiering
can you,
them.
Can you own or copyright the translations?
We own the translations. The translations.
So if other opera companies want to do them,
Our Cousin from Nowhere went up in Toronto Opera, Toronto Operetta Theater just this past March and was a huge hit there. And the translation got a great review. That was our version. A couple companies are looking at doing Arizona Lady.
And a little cash cow for
one
you.
One of the things, yeah, a little.
And spread the word.
Spread the word. And some of the stuff that we've done has caught on internationally as we are certainly Arizona Lady, which we really did the second performance of that show ever when we did the world premiere of that here in American premiere of that in 2010. That show is now going to be done at the Coma Schoper in Berlin this next year.
Wow.
So this is the influence we've had. Even our kids show, which is our little Peter and Paul and Schlaraffen lot, this German children's operetta, which is by Lehar, one of the rarest shows in the world. We've produced three or four times now. We have little kids walking around Oak Park area singing these songs like the most normal things in the world. But that show that we produced has now been revived by a couple of companies in Vienna we've now discovered that after seeing that we have done. So we're having, in our own ways, a little influence, you know.
How many shows have you recorded, a professional recorder, you know?
Well, professionally recorded, we've had
or quality recording.
I'd say the last three or four shows we've had really quality. I
mean, they're available for sale.
Only this Tom Bull is available for sale. And you know, this is as the company grows, and so one of the facets that we need to look at. And there's record companies interested in doing it, especially
you should get the word. You're creating an audience.
Right. If we don't do it, these shows will continue to lie dormant. Sometimes when we're researching these shows and trying to find where the materials are published and stuff is, the publishers don't even know. They haven't had a request for the show in 80 years. What's the name of the show? And after a couple of days, they get back to us, and then we track the scores down. And we were thrilled to have Anthony Barresi come on as a music director this past year. Meister Barresi works out Opera Southwest, and he's a terrific conductor, and he's been able to help us with some of the orchestrations. A lot of these shows do not have orchestral reductions, so there's not an orchestral score, full orchestral score, complete score. So
real raw
material. So we had to cobble that together and make the best of it. So,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. What's the future going to be?
Well, there's a lot. I say that, you know, the year we were going to do Rose of Istanbul. I came across Arizona and I fell in love with the show. We produced Arizona first, and then the next year we caught up with the Rose of Istanbul. I have some shows. I'll look at some stuff by Joseph Baer, Beer. We're also going to look at some more Abraham. We do eventually want to get A Widow under our belt. We want to do a translation that we think that works.
There's been some hokey ones around.
That's a difficult show, and it's unfortunately it's suffered, you know, suffered from this for many years by bad translations and stuff. And we like to tackle that. We're a big Lehar company. We love a lot of Lehar. We've done a lot of his stuff.
I know you mentioned, I don't know if you can say much about it, but you guys are looking for a home too, right?
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. It'd be nice to be in one theater. Yeah. I mean, finding that space in Chicago is hard, where there's an orchestra pit and a couple hundred seat theater.
Orchestra pit's the key, right?
Orchestra pit's the key. Yeah, we're doing...
Because you want to keep from having the mic, and that's one of the things I really appreciate about your shows.
Yeah.
It's done in opera style. There's no mics, and folks... Right. Most of the singers can really project. Even with a 20-piece orchestra, you can hear every word.
Yeah,
and that,
yeah.
That says a lot. I've been to a lot of shows where the cast are mic'd, and you still can't hear them.
Yeah, we want to keep this as natural as possible. So, yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
A home is in your
home
future.
In the future. Where that's going to be, we're looking for it in Chicago. So.
What do you think that Ball at the Savoy, I think... It could translate into a Broadway musical.
I think
just the way it is now.
I think it would work terrifically as a Broadway musical, and have the production values that a Broadway musical can bring to it would be fantastic. But the show is witty. It's a great, terrific farce.
It dances, and you love the characters.
Yeah.
It's musically, what a variety of music.
Very accessible, he had a lot of, Abraham had a lot of eclectic interest combinations and stuff that we were just really, really thrilled. Mm-hmm. And we were thrilled to get the American premiere of it. And
so if Bob Falls called you from the Goodman, you'd talk to him.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Hint, hint. No, I really think that you guys have proven the product.
Yeah.
And the quality. It's all a matter of just getting some people involved and somebody writing a nice big check, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what you're doing now with Mira, I mean, I'm looking at this set. We're recording this in the theater, and I'm looking at this Art Deco set. It's amazing.
Like we said, we have a great set designer this time. We're just thrilled with the work he's done. It's a beautiful set. And it works very well for the show.
Are you open to having artists of different, you know, technical and lighting and sets and that come work for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We found some great people, and we continue to find great people year to year. And like I said, I would suspect for a designer to come into work on a show like this, it's the project. It's the there's no... template for it. It's not been done before. It's a chance to really, we really lean on our designers to use all their skill set.
Talk about building your portfolio. Wow.
Yeah. This is to use their skill set.
And your musicians. A lot of them are young, right?
We'll have good civic orchestra players and around the city of Chicago. But Chicago has a plethora of great singers, great string players, great orchestras. I mean, and they're here. And that's the great thing about Chicago. We can find those people here.
Yeah, and they're young. I mean, looking at the orchestra, I was struck by the fact that they sound much more mature than they look.
A very great orchestra. Yeah. We've got incredible players. And
this is not community theater. These people are all paid.
Oh, yeah.
These are all professionals.
It's all professionals, yeah. Yeah, everything's paid. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's great stuff.
So what's coming up?
Well, we have our Operetta Exile concert, which we're looking to do here in October here at the 773. We're just trying to confirm some dates on that. And that is a really one of the more haunting concerts we've done here. It's a small chamber orchestra, and we track these composers who were forced into exile due to the World War II. And their stories are moving and compelling. And it's a very emotional concert. And serves back us to get back to the missions that we are trying to give voice to these forgotten composers in this forgotten genre.
Well, if it's anything like the concert that I attended a few weeks back.
Moon Over Berlin, yeah.
About Berlin with the videos. I never knew that scene. So many other people didn't. I had my mouth open the whole time. And that was a concert where you had the photos.
We have this in the Exile concert is structured similarly to that, but also has the chamber orchestra with it, so we get a real effect. And once again, Meister Baresi made the arrangements, which is a terrific asset to the company for us to have in the company.
So that's not only those concerts worthy, but they sort of give people a taste of some of the future shows that you're planning on doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime we feature a song from a show, there's a good chance that you're going to hear that down the road.
Well, yeah. You are to be congratulated. And it's so nice to talk to people who are passionate about what they do.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm finding out that in this town, there's a lot of very passionate people. And the collaboration. I mean, you walk in to see this show, say, well, I'll go see an operetta, some German operetta, and then you'll say, wow, look at the set. And then the orchestras are playing, and then you guys start singing.
Yeah.
And within 10 minutes, you say to yourself, my God, where has this stuff been?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. That's exactly what we want.
And that's what you did, you know. Yeah. I know the Tribune liked it. I know John Ron Ryan liked your show.
Yeah.
I loved it. And are you getting a few more reviewers coming out?
Yeah, 4 reviewers coming out. And, you know, we just want to get the word out there. It's a great time and well worth the
ticket price. Stage 773 playing for the next couple of weekends through August 3rd. But go to the Chicago Folks Operetta
.org
and get all the information on it.
Website, yeah.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, folks. And go see a play this week. Go see this operetta. You'll enjoy it. Thank you. Thank you.